This is the River Avenue Blues Podcast. I'm Joe Polakowski, joined by Jay Gordon. We are in the depths of spring training right now. Jay, I feel like this is the time of year that we don't have the excitement of pitchers and catchers reporting. We're still weeks away from opening day. Everyone's kind of going through the motions right now.
Yeah, you know, it's that point where I think the pitchers are still pretty much ahead of the hitters. It's pretty obvious to see that from a lot of the performances I've seen it so far. But that's to be expected. You're still within that like 2 week range mm-hmm. of the beginning of because pitchers always show up first anyhow. But there's been a lot of fun so far, you know, between Russell Wilson showing up and taking batting practice and having an at bat, which was, you know, it was nice. Good for him. You know, it was cool that he took part with the org to like seeing some stuff like we did today. Severino with some really nice stuff. I had heard his previous sim start was really dynamic. So it's great to hear that he's coming out strong right away.
Yeah, and I do wonder, you know, how, you know, there's always talk about guy pitched more innings than he ever has. He's pitched, you know, they've pitched deep into the postseason. How is he going to come back and handle this year? And I'm legit worried about it too. But I do wonder, it seems like these guys are just, you know, over the top meticulous with their offseason training programs. And I really wonder how that's going to change the game in terms of, you know, what we see from guys, you know, having extreme workloads 1 year, going to the next year, not necessarily getting injured, but seeing like, Dallas Keuchel in 2016, you know, the drop off in performance after 2015 when he pitched, you know, longer than he ever had.
Well, if you look at Severino's, you know, pitching in the majors, he's got a huge, I mean, obviously you can't really say 2016 because, you know, he only pitched some in the majors in 2016. But if you look at what he did last year, it was 193 innings that you got from the guy mm-hmm. and 31 starts. How much more could you ask for? Not a lot. Plus all that postseason innings.
Yep.
So he has given you 200 innings plus. That's what you want from an ace, and you already see that he's capable of it. I do worry about that second year bounce back for a young player, especially like you said, Dallas Keuchel was a good example. But we've seen a few World Series hangovers. We definitely saw it with some of the stuff that came out of Jake Arrieta, a guy that we'll talk a little bit more about as we continue. But, you know, the year after they win the World Series, Jake Arrieta's stuff really wasn't the same. And if you remember, I thought he took a big drop off.
Yeah, he did. And that's one of the reasons he's still unemployed right now. And to be frank, I don't think he's getting a contract until after the draft.
It's possible. But we'll talk a little bit more about some free agents that are still left. We're going to keep going on a bit more about the spring training. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, and Joe and I, before we started recording, we were musing about it, but Giancarlo Stanton doesn't really need to do much with a bat in order for a ball to just fly off of it.
Yeah, that double today was something else, just kind of poked it into the corner. And, like, you know, guys poking into the corner, you kind of think – dribbling one down the first baseline and it goes in the corner. This is more like the alleyway, but mm-hmm. just
a little bit more to the right. It's out.
Yeah. And it was effortless. I feel like Judge did that a bunch last season too, where mm-hmm. they're so good at pitch recognition is when it's an outside pitch, they think they can get the bat on it. You know, they're going to right field. And, you know, I swear, like, Judge, his huge advantage is his ability to go the other way with power. One of my favorite players of all time, Alex Rodriguez, could do the same thing. And it looks mm-hmm. like, you know, I know that Giancarlo has more of a pull profile, but I feel like we've seen in spring training already him going the other way a ton.
Yeah, his oppo swings have looked really great. And I think it's because he has such incredible coverage of the plate because he's got these big, big arms and because of just how much he's able to extend the bat through the zone, you can see that he can get to just about anything. It's really impressive. It's not like a junk ball swinger like a Vlad Guerrero or even, you know, Jorge Posada was a notorious kind of junk ball swinger. But he's got such great pitch recognition, and the fact that he can find what he wants and just poke the bat at it, and just the amount of power that he generates is just incredible to hit the ball so far.
Yeah, and it seems like everyone's hitting the tar out of the ball this year.
Gary, wow.
One of the most sweetest sounding home runs I've ever heard in my life.
I it was incredible, that crack. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was Ruco who had said, you know, I think he was calling that game, and he said that, like, that was one of those things you hear and you know, just the ball's gone, it's over. Like, that, there's no doubt about it. Like, you don't even have to look, you just walk. And that was one of those things where, you know, Gary didn't pimp it too hard, but he gave it a little bit of style.
Yeah.
And he had deserved it because he crushed that ball.
And he had time because it did, you know, it hung up there a while. It's not like it was, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a rocket, but it was high.
So, I mean, he went over the O. He went over the O in George on that scoreboard. That's really, really hard. And let's also talk about someone that's been a really, really lovely, lovely guy to see just start to get it together. And it's Esteban Florial. Man, has he been a bunch of fun to watch.
The fun thing about Florial is that he's got this toolsy game, as the scouts say. He is darting around the field. The guys, I mean, he can play a mean center field. And his bat is so fast.
And it's just fun to watch him. And like I said this on Twitter the other day on our account, he reminds me, the way he moves in center field, a little bit of B.J. Upton. Just that, if you remember, B.J. Upton had these gliding legs, of like almost like a gazelle, where he could just move without even any effort to get to any ball. And it seems like, you know, Florial has kind of like that same gait where he just moves so quickly and it doesn't look like there's much effort to it. Just a really, really fun guy to watch.
That would be an amazing outcome too. I mean, when Upton was in his prime, he was an awesome center fielder.
He was one of the, like I said, it was amazing to kind of watch him when he was with the Rays, in those years in which he was at his healthiest, because he had such amazing ability to go back on the ball, especially, you know, with his back turned. He could run and go back on a ball and make those catches because he played so shallow. And I think it was just a product of that ballpark. But if you remember in 08, he was just a tremendous guy to watch out there.
Oh, I remember well. He used to kill the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of, you know, killing the Yankees, there hasn't really been a lot of the killing of the Yankees so far in the spring training. They've done a lot of winning, which isn't really all that important, but it sets a good precedent for what this team is all about, because it really seems to be that they're just hitting for so much pop, and that's what we were all sold that this team was going to do.
Yeah, and if the major leaguers don't hit for pop or they get injured, we got minor league pop too. Like Billy McKinney is hitting the tar out of the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about crack of the bat home runs. His home run, I believe it was last night, maybe it was the night before, whatever, the one, his ninth inning one. Just the sound off that was amazing. The guy can really hit. I know Ben, who really is overdue for an appearance on the podcast, was talking about, you know, how much fun it is to watch this guy who's, you know, they got him in the Chapman trade. He was kind of a reclamation project in a way. Really starting to bounce back, really starting to become a piece, and has just no place to play at all. And, like, no place to play now, and no place, even if they make a few moves, there's really no place for him to play.
Yep. So let's talk about some of the other things that have gone on. Clint Frazier is getting a little closer. He's been doing some workouts, but he's taking his time. Ellsbury could start running on Saturday. Today's Thursday, so a few days from now. But it's still a wait and see that he's ready by opening day. You know, I don't know if it's really that great that both of them are hurt. We all make jokes about, you know, Ellsbury being that guy that, oh, God, I wish you could find a way to just get rid of him. But having both of those guys kind of go down at the same time so early makes you realize that they are very lucky that they have that much outfield depth.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, the idea that they had to trade Ellsbury was a bit overblown. Keeping Ellsbury around, it's going to be useful this year. I just think, you know, it kind of hurts from a roster flexibility standpoint where you have, you know, you have five guys who can play nothing but outfield. So, and, you know, Ellsbury can't play right field. Gardner can't play right field. I guess having, you know, Judge and Stanton makes up for that. But it, there's not, there really isn't a ton of flexibility in the outfield right now is the only, I think the only downside to being stuck with Ellsbury, other than the salary.
Yeah.
The salary thing is what it is.
The salary thing's tough, but, you know, that's the name of the game in the situation. You know, they made a bad deal. There's no way out of it. They're just going to have to live with it and hope that he gives them some production. I mean, we've talked about this, you know, ad nauseum at this point. And I just can say that he's a part of this organization until he's not. And that's the best way you can look at it. And it is what it is because it bees that way, as someone very, very famous once said. So the Yankees also announced their first round of cuts today. The people of real note, Justice Sheffield, he had a really tough start to the spring. You could see that the stuff's there, but I think he's still working out, finding his location. And Dylan Tate was sent down. I guess the other most notable is Kale Koshaw. But there's still a lot to be done for Justice. He's only 21. The organization actually decided to put his locker next to CeCe Sabathia, and I think that that was a really good idea.
Oh, yeah. CeCe's been – I mean, he was on his podcast talking about how when he's done with the game, he wants to basically be paid to hang out with players. I mean, hey, look, I'd aspire to something like that, too, if I were in his position. But it's clearly where he feels comfortable. You know, he talked in that same podcast. He talked about how when he came up, a lot of the Indians of that era were, you know, if they weren't assigned to young players by management, they took to that task themselves. And they really made, you know, the young guys in the early 2000s when they were, you know, basically transitioning from one powerhouse to the next. You know, when they were in that kind of those glory days, they had guys who would really mentor the young players. And that's, I don't think there's, you know, there's no way to undersell that. It's super important. And I love that CeCe's taking that role.
Imagine you got Albert Bell as your buddy. Oh no, Albert Bell got assigned to me. What does that mean? That means that, well, let's put it this way. I'm picking up all the meals. Oh, man. So also, there was a little bit of chatter today that Aaron Judge says he does not think that he will return to the home run derby. And some of that has to do with the fact that he believes it exacerbated the shoulder issue that he had.
Well, look, he was awesome going into the break. He hit a ton of home runs and exhausted himself in the World Series and in the home run derby. Came out and was noticeably slower with the bat, at least. And the results showed it for, what, 4 or 5 weeks after that?
So, didn't he take a nasty hit against the wall, though, around the same, like maybe a week or two before the All-Star break? Like, I really recall him just taking a nasty spill against the wall, and it was noticeable after that, yet he was starting to get his shoulder wrapped.
Yeah, I do remember the shoulder wrap. I don't remember the incident specifically, but I do remember like a lot of, you know, footage of his shoulder being wrapped after games.
Yeah, I mean, he took a lot of hits against the wall, and it was actually, you know, a lot of people were impressed to see his physicality and getting out there and going 100%, but it also took a toll on him. And I think that probably a combination of just his style play plus, you know, the derby. Absolutely, because of the amount of repetition that you do that you typically don't do in BP and you don't do in a game.
Yeah.
So it's just something that I can imagine would have some impact on a player.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I can't remember. I don't know if Judge mentioned this or someone else did, but it made a lot of sense to me is you have this long ass 6 month season and you get a nice break in the middle of it. And, you know, most of the league goes home and gets it to actually take a breather for a couple days. Well, Judge is probably going to a few more All-Star games in his day. If he doesn't go this year, he's got a few more in him for sure. And for him, you know, he's not going to get that break. So why would he go and make it that much worse? And I guess that's an argument, you know, that's a hole in the argument of the home run derby being a thing that has to happen. You know, they might need to change things up if more and more players start to get wise to this.
Well, you know, it what do they say it's for? It's for the fans.
Yep.
You know, that's what the Home Run Derby's always been about. And now that the game is back to being really just an exhibition, you know, it's hard to find the fun in it aside from the guys just playing, because obviously it's not the same as it was in the 60s and the 70s, where those guys really, really played for pride. You know, obviously the years before, but you hear those stories about how much, you know, Pete Rose, like in an all-star game, you know, was it against Ray Fosse where he went all in and basically ended the guy's career in an exhibition game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because they cared a little bit more. It was just a different type of play, where the guys nowadays, they don't want to hurt each other in an exhibition game. That's not what the game's about nowadays. And I think that there's just different attitudes. And now it's more about seeing players actually palling around and having fun. And maybe a home run derby that is a format that's like hundreds of swings isn't really the best idea.
Oh, there you
maybe
go.
Maybe it's shorter. Maybe it's only a few swings. Maybe it's one round and you're down and you're out, you know, rather than, you know, what was it, four friggin' rounds or something like that, where you, I mean, I don't know what else it can be, but if you could reduce the amount of swings that they have to do and still keep it a fun time, I'm okay with it. But you're never going to get Josh Hamilton. It's never going to happen again. It's a once in a lifetime experience.
Yeah, no, and those are some absolutely phenomenal points, and especially that the game has changed. And look at what the NBA and the NHL have done with their All-Star breaks. They've gone a completely different direction. It's not just East versus West. You know, same game is always East versus West, or, you know, American versus National in baseball's case. They've done something different with the All-Star game. They you know, found a way to make it still friendly for the fans, something the fans want to see, but it's not taxing to the players in the same way that a normal game would be. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not saying that what baseball should do just because other sports are doing it, but if they want to continue maintaining this fan interest in the All-Star game, you know, fans want to see, you know, the All-Star game is one thing. We want to see the players playing meaningful games healthy. And if there's any concern about them getting broken down because of this, or, you know, again, you know, the speed thing with the Home Run Derby, that could be a factor too. So while it's super amusing, you know, I would rather see Aaron Judge healthy for 162 games rather than see him knock, you know, 60 homers out of the park.
I would absolutely agree.
60 homers would be nice.
I'm not complaining that as an aggregate over the season.
Exactly.
But definitely not in a night. So I wanted to talk with you, Joe, a bit about the remaining free agents. So I am going to give you a few names. And some of them are really actually just straight up surprising. Jake Arrieta, we already talked about that. Starting pitcher, still no job. I believe that, in all honesty, this is a situation that either gets rectified after the draft, or he, or to be honest with you, or maybe by next week, he just tells his agent, I need something. I mean, you have to wonder, and CeCe, I heard talk about this, is that you start wondering, like, where is my family living? Where is my life going to be?
And that's something that we, as fans, I love that the man is able to talk to us directly, because we don't get this perspective. You know, we're just thinking, how is this guy going to fit onto my favorite team or onto another team? And it's about so much more than that to the players.
Yeah, and I think about some of the other guys that are still free agents. It's actually bothering me that they're free agents. And one of those guys I actually got to say is Melky Cabrera. I mean, there's no reason for him to be a free agent. He is a serviceable player right now. There's no reason why a major league club cannot use Melky Cabrera. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Not that I'm the biggest Melky Cabrera fan, but I think about his age. I think about his skill set. And I think about just what he's able to bring to a team. And the fact that, you know, Nate McClouth is on an organization right now.
He is? What?
I believe he is.
That's just insane to me.
I saw some video of him. Let me see. Nate McLeod. Let me double check.
And that is, I haven't heard the name in forever.
Apparently he apparently he's speaking in a really, really perfect.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. Spanish.
Let's see. No, maybe I'm wrong.
No. I know, I take your point very, you know, very well though. And you know,
okay, Nate McLeod is not in Oregon Ball. Excuse me, everybody. I really do apologize for that. But still, like, Melky Cabrera doesn't have a job. That's the good. Trevor Rosenthal, you know, what hurt, but you're shocked that someone hasn't picked him up with a one-year deal on the back end of it. Jason Worth could probably DH for a few teams, but it doesn't seem like people really want to do that right now. Mike Moustakas.
They were talking, like, MLBTR had a bit on him today. They were trying to read between the lines of what Boris was saying, and they picked out that, you know, he could wait until June, mainly because Boris was making a big stink about the draft pick compensation thing, which is also the problem with Arrieta.
You know, I also think about, like, Hellickson and, you know, some guys who are still kind of close to their prime. They're not necessarily. I know, but I'm just saying in the age, his age range, you know, he's still close to that prime, and it must be rough to kind of be in that position. You know, you think about a Jose Bautista and say, like, you know, his performance really wasn't up there, but, you know, the fact that someone wouldn't just give him a AAA or a minor league deal and bring him into camp and see what they can get out of him and give him the incentives to make money, it's just insane to me. But at the same time, the fact that he thinks he can hold out for something large is also kind of crazy to me too, because you see what he's done.
Yeah, you do. There's actually a recent report from Sportsnet, the Canadian station, that he could retire.
Mm.
Actually, no, it's from John Heyman.
Oh, wow.
I trust John Heyman. So
one of the things that I've noticed, and I think it was it Tyler Clippard who said that, you know, if a player takes a year off, you know, because they can't get signed in a deal, you know, they're dead. You know, that's a major blip on your career to have to take a year off because you can't get signed with a major league club. But if a club decides that they want to quit on the league before the year even starts, like the Marlins and a few other baseball teams that simply said, you know what, we're not going to spend any money this year. We know we're going to put out a bad product, so those free agents aren't going to get signed by us. It's kind of troubling that they're in that position now, that teams can just take the year off and players can't.
Yeah, it is insane, and I do actually have a fresh opinion on this. I know I ranted about it for a long time in a previous podcast, but this actually actively bothers me that teams like this aren't spending money because they're not going to be good. So the logic is, we're not going to be good, so we're not going to spend money, because why would we spend money to be mediocre? It makes no sense to me. One, because a mediocre team outdraws a crappy team. So you're giving your fans more of what they want. Two, it's not like you need the top draft pick in sports, in baseball to win. The Astros, they tanked, right? They tanked for number one picks. And what did they get out of it? I mean, they got Carlos Correa out of it, which is great. And then they got a lot of nothing because they botched those picks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's a necessary component of being able to rebuild a team. So, you know, teams like the Marlins, who they're a situation I don't even want to get into because that's just kind of embarrassing right at this point. But teams like, teams like the White Sox, teams like, the Giants are spending even though they're kind of crappy. They should be putting money into free agents, try to play close to 500 ball, because it's a matter of faith thing to me. Like, I would have a lot more faith in a team that continued to spend even though they weren't going to be very good. The Yankees did this. I know they have more money than every other team in baseball. But, you know, they continued through the rebuild to spend money on payroll and put players on the field.
Yeah, I think that there's a good faith and bad faith contention that some teams really do things. Like, You know, when I say bad faith contention, I say, you know, I look at the Marlins and I say what they've basically told their fan base is, we're not going to try.
Mm-hmm.
And we're proving that to you by reducing the amount of money that we spend on this team, because we know that a minimal viable product is still a moneymaker. You know, whether it's, you know, if you make a shitty play on Broadway, you'll make more money with that than you will with a hit of the producers, if you will. But baseball has actually become a little bit like a producers. You know, the old Mel Brooks film, where you literally can make more money on an organization that's bad simply because you underpay you underspend on your payroll, and you simply collect money in revenue sharing. And if you have a decent cable deal, like, you know, the teams like the Rangers do, you're still going to make money.
Yeah, and that's really what bothers me about the whole situation, is that, you know, they're able to do this. They're called out by the media, but the media needs them for access, so they don't get called out too much. But teams like, teams like the Tigers, teams like the Phillies are, to me, doing it kind of right. At least they spent a little money on free agency. They've been in on a few free agents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're at least trying to put, you know, they're not going to be good this year, but they're trying to put a serviceable product on the field.
Getting Carlos Santana, I think, really was a sign of good faith to their fans.
That, exactly.
You know what? This is a potential 30, you know, 30, 100 guy that we can add to our lineup. You know, 25, 30 home runs a year. We'll play a serviceable first base, good locker room guy. And it basically said that we think something could happen in the next 2-3 years. And that's nice to see from an organization. When you see the Marlins, where, you know, well, that's great, Starlin Castro is going to be cool to hit those like 30 home runs. They're going to be, you know, make it 6-1. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Or make it, you know, 4-1, and they still lose, but he'll still get some, you know, decent at bats. And maybe by the end of the year, they'll be able to trade, or by the midseason, they'll be able to trade him for somebody that could actually use him. You know, I don't know, but I just don't really see a lot of the point with the way baseball's going lately of not giving players that they know can add something to the organization. So I wanted to start maybe wrapping things up, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We've been talking a while, but there's some questions that before I started the podcast, we started the podcast, I put on Twitter if anybody have any questions. So I'm going to just put out some of those questions to you, and I'll give my take on it after I ask you. How about that?
Sounds good to me. There's one in particular I like, if we could start with it, from Perro.
Perro, yeah, sure. I'll start with that one. So Perro wants to know, chances Brandon Drury gets traded this season?
See, when they first got him, I was like, all right, this guy is kind of mediocre. He can play a couple positions. He's hit okay. So as long as they're willing to cut ties with him at some point, I was cool with the trade, because they didn't give up a whole ton. But I can absolutely see it. They've got, like, they're so strong in the infield. Like, their pipeline is, you know, power pitchers and middle infield. So they have the players to cover all this. And, you know, Torres is far from the worst utility infielder you're going to find. So I think the trading Drury is, knowing, you know, again, observing Cashman over the years, it's definitely something that's on the table if they see, you know, that they're getting production out of the young guys and they can find another team that has a use for them.
Gotcha. So let's see what else. Got a few other questions here. So Kyle Dink John wants to know, Dink John, Romine's new close stance looking like Giancarlo. Any word on that? I haven't heard anything on that. Have you?
No, I've not heard anything at all.
Yeah, sorry. Rob Boylan, who apparently his Twitter handle is R Boylan Sucks. Sorry, you have that bad kind of self-perception of yourself. Is Herman a legit candidate for 5th, 6th, the bullpen, or did he just give a good outing? I don't know if he's a legit out of spring training.
No, but I think he can take over Cessa's, you know, next guy up spot.
It's possible Cessa's gone ahead and got had a neck thing, but I think he'll be all right later next week or later in the weekend. But I know that, you know, Herman opened up some eyes. His fastball did a lot of dancing and people loved it. So be very interesting. So how's about Brandon Marino? He would like to know. Haven't been keeping up with spring numbers, but what's up with Glaber? So let's bring up Glaber's numbers so far. And I will say that it has already gotten some play that apparently the Yankees have said Glaber needs to kind of maybe stay within himself and slow down a bit. Don't try to do so much.
I missed that, but that's definitely a precursor to we're sending you down to AAA to start the season.
I mean, it's really got the feel that Boone was basically breaking it. But Boone said something around that. Let's see. So Glaber is batting 158 with a 200 OBP, and he's not really hitting for power either. And he's made a couple mistakes over at second base. And the downside for him on there is that Tyler Wade has made some really pretty plays over there. Drury is capable of also playing second. So it really could be that Andujar maybe ends up being the guy instead of Glaber to start in the major leagues this year.
Probably a better shot given the way both of them have been hitting. But I think I see Torres, Drury, and Wade breaking camp with the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I it's going to be one of those things where either Glaber in the next week or so really picks it up and starts showing something, or he'll actually get sent to minor league camp and he'll finish up there and, you know, start the league and start the year in AAA. So GB2 fan, which I believe refers to Ghostbusters 2. I got to be honest with you, Ghostbusters 2 fan, I always really did like Viggo the Carpathian. He was a great movie villain. Didn't get enough, you know, play. But GB2 fan wants to know, what about the intro music? I want to know about that too, Joe. Can you find some really like crappy free music to play before this?
I can, but do we need intro music?
I want like some wheedly wheedly guitar. Something silly to be like, hi, this is the River Avenue Blues podcast. I think people would appreciate it. Find some free music and we'll just see what happens. All right.
All right. How about this? I'm only doing it if Mike records an intro.
Okay. Sure. It'll be like, hey, this is the River Avenue's podcast. Damn, man. I think it'd be something like that. So we'll get on that Ghostbusters 2 fan and keep up watching that film. So Andy, a long time fan, Andy and Sonny DB wants to know, how many wins do you see for the Yankees if they have an underwhelming season, an expected season, and an exceptional season?
88, 95, 102.
83, 91, 99. Man. I really think that the AL East is going to beat the hell out of one another.
The Red Sox,
I really do believe that what you're going to see with the Red Sox and the Yankees is they're kind of going to bludgeon each other. Mm-hmm. But I think that once you start going into some other divisions, there's some good teams. I just think that you're going to find that the pitching in the league – for a little while will catch up with the middle of that Yankees order and they could have some slumps. So what I'm saying is I'm not going to say, you know, year, maybe 85. Okay. Year 85, 87, a great year, you know, I'm going to have to go 95, I guess an exceptional year. I'll give you the 100. Right. I'm sorry that I don't really I don't like to prognosticate on wins, and that's only because I like to let things kind of happen. But I do believe that it's going to take I don't know if it's going to take quite a lot to win the division as far as wins. I think that it could to win the division, because it'll be so close, could take 90, 91, 92 wins.
Yeah, definitely. And here's my thing with the high ceiling and the low floor. They got 55 games against the Rays, the Blue Jays, and the Orioles, who are all terrible.
You know, you want to feel that, but you know what happens over the course of a season. That, you know, your pitching is not tends to be the problem. So what I want to say is that you have to kind of give yourself some time and know that there's going to be one of those stupid games where the Rays are going to hit five home runs off Yankee pitching. It's going to happen to Tanaka one night. It's going to happen to CC. You kind of have to just live with that. You know what I mean?
No, I get you. I just still have a lot more faith in them being able to beat up on the bottom feeders.
Gotcha. Well, you know, I think I'm all done with questions for tonight then. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good myself too.
All right. Well, you know, that's another episode of the River Ave Blues podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, best way I'd say is riveravblues@gmail.com. You can find me, Jay, at jaydestro, that's jaydestro, on Twitter. And you can find Mr. Joe Paul at Joe Paul, JoePawl. Anything else to say this week, Mr. Polakowski?
No, I don't. Just glad to be back in the groove of things.
Really awesome. We'll catch you next week. Mike has stated that last week this week was just not a doable, but he said he will try his best next week. So we will have Axiza cast. Awesome. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll catch you next week. See ya.
Later.